is Polyphonic Press, the podcast where two music fans pick a classic album completely at random. Using the patented random album generator, they are given an album to review from a curated list of over 1,000 classic releases, spanning multiple genres. And now onto the show. Here are your hosts, Jeremy Boyd and John Van Dyke.
All right, hey, welcome to Polyphonic Press. I'm Jeremy Boyd.
I'm John Van Dyke.
And let's not waste any time. We've got the patented random album generator right in front of us here. So let's hit the button and see what album we're going to be listening to this week. And the album we're going to be listening to is Michael Viner's incredible bongo band, Bongo Rock.
Okay.
All right. I have no idea what this is.
I guess it's Bongo Rock.
Apparently. So this is what it says on allmusic.com. It says, there's a fun story behind this album, retold in detail in the liner notes. In 1972, Michael Viner was an executive at MGM Records, asked to put together some music for the soundtrack of an upcoming B-movie horror film, The Thing with Two Heads. He called on songwriter Perry Botkin Jr., and the two of them whipped up a pair of songs called Bongo Rock and Bongolia. By the middle of 1973, the songs attributed to the incredible bongo band began to take off, both in Canada and on the US R&B and pop charts. So Viner and Botkin took the concept to the next obvious level and cut an album, also titled Bongo Rock. Successful enough to scrape into the bottom of the Billboard album chart, the pair put together The Return of the Incredible Bongo Band in 1974 before fizzling out. There are some other pertinent details worth knowing. For example, that Jim Gordon of Derek and the Dominoes fame was one of the key drummers on the project, and that Ringo Starr supposedly stopped in to bang out a few beats. But some of the best stuff happened long after the demise of the IBB, when early hip-hop DJs such as Kool DJ Herc and Grandmaster Flash, and then the Sugar Hill Gang, Massive Attack, and others discovered the incredible Bongo Band's recordings and began using samples from them. What started as a tossed-off filler session for a crummy flick took on a life of its own. Interesting as it is to hear how their own as classically kitschy cheese rock. Bongos aren't the only sound heard, naturally, and fans of both lounge rock and that crisp reverby guitar sound prominent in old spy movies and adventures records will dig what the IBB were all about. Their version of Apache, the classic 60s instrumental made famous by The Shadows, is the equal of any other, and while that can't be said of their takes on Satisfaction, Raunchy, Wipeout, or even In a Gata De Vida, these studio musicians, most of whom the creators of IBB don't recall, but which may or may not have included some heavyweights, sure had a good time stepping out on their nights off.
All right.
Okay.
In a Gata De Vida, eh?
Yeah. Okay, so there's not much info on the album itself, but it was released in 1973 and released on Pride Records. And if you're listening along, I'm not sure where side one and side two begin and end, but this is weird because I think it's both albums combined. So there's 19 tracks on here. Pretty long, but so I guess what we'll do is we'll listen to 10 and 10 and 10 or 10 and 9, and we'll pause halfway through if you're listening along. And it starts off with the first half will start with Apache and we'll end at Sing Sing Sing. And we'll pause halfway through and discuss. And so without any further ado, here is Bongo Rock by the Incredible Bongo Band. Here's the first song called Apache. Okay, I'm going to stop it there because I found out that the original album is only the first 8 songs.
Okay.
So I'm stopping it. If you're listening along, I've stopped it after Dueling Bongos because it's both albums combined. So I don't know if the other album is worth listening to, but the original album is what came up. So, and it's only the first, I don't know where side one ends it. I couldn't find that information, but I'm just, yeah, that's the original album anyway. But anyway, yeah. What do you think of this so far? It's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's actually kind of cool. I am enjoying it. It's definitely got that production quality of like a corporate sort of a project that you would, you know, come across, you know, around that era. But it doesn't really detract from it. It's actually kind of cool.
Yeah, it definitely sounds like incidental music for a movie or something like that, like that quality anyway. And yeah, you're right. It does have that sort of thing. And no, it doesn't really detract from it. I mean, it's almost jazz-like in a way.
It reminds me of Afrobeat, actually, in a lot of ways.
Yeah. And yeah, it's very bizarre too. Like I was just reading about what I could find, and it's just, I don't even know why this album exists. It influenced a lot of hip hop, and a lot of hip hop songs were use the drums as samples and stuff like that, and a lot of the instruments as well. And one of the things it said on Wikipedia is in the 2013 documentary Sample This, directed by Dan Forer and narrated by Gene Simmons, recounts the story of the Incredible Bongo Band and its recording of Apache. I'm very curious about that, because that version of Apache, the drum intro to Apache, I recognize in a lot of hip hop, or a lot of early hip hop use that. I think the Sugar Hill Gang, which is considered to be the first rap hit, Rapper's Delight, I think they used that as part of the intro to that. And so there's a lot of influence this album has had. But it's just, I don't know why this exists. The 70s were weird for that sort of thing. It's like, why does this exist? Like, who is this for?
Yeah, well, I think the fact that it became a hit in the 70s is more like, because there's lots of stuff like this that existed all the way from the 50s into, well, I can't think of an equivalent in the 80s, but definitely 50s, 60s, 70s is a lot of stuff like this. But this was successful.
Yeah. And it seems like such an anomaly. But for it to be that successful, like, yeah, you're right. There's stuff like this that has existed, but it's like,
not necessarily bongos, but I'm talking about
instrumental sort of
instrumental
novelty,
almost novelty sort of stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. And, but for it to have this impact and for it to be included on, you know, the greatest albums of all time, it's like, whoa, okay. And so, yeah, it's very, very strange. I don't even know who's playing on this thing. Like, there's almost no information on it.
I think the primary drummer is Jim Gordon, as they were saying in the other thing.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, other than that, I don't know.
Yeah. Interesting. Okay. So Bongo Rock, the song Bongo Rock.
Yeah.
Is an old song from the 50s, 1959. Yeah. Did you know that? I didn't know that.
I think I'd heard something about it.
Written and recorded by Preston Epps, released as a single in 1959, charted on The Incredible, in 1973, The Incredible Bongo Band recorded a cover version of Bongo. So that's the closing track. But there, Let There Be Drums was one of the songs we heard, right?
Yep.
Yes, that was the second song. So it's also a cover. I don't think there's any original songs on here. I think they're all covers. But there's Leather Pajamas is a 1961 instrumental composed by American drummer Sandy Nelson and guitarist Richard Podolor, who later became renowned record producer. Yeah, okay. The Incredible Bongo Band's rendition of this instrumental was the theme music for Atlantic Grand Prix Wrestling telecast on the former ATV in Maritime Canada between 1970s and 1980s.
Okay.
That's very specific. The song had reached number 66 in the Canadian RPM charts. It was also featured in the 10th inning of Ken Burns Baseball. Okay. So yeah, so a lot of these songs have been used as like instrumental things in movies and TV shows and stuff. This is fascinating to me. And I wish there was more information that I could look up, but it's very limited. But anyway, I'm curious to hear the rest of it. So if you are listening along, update, we've stopped at Dueling Bongos and the next one is Inagata De Vida and the closing track will be Bongo Rock. So here we go. I'm very curious to hear this version of Inagata De Vida. So let's get to it. Here's Incredible Bongo Band's version of Inagata De Vida. So here we go. All right, and ending the album with Bongo Rock. I don't. it's fascinating to me. And still, I don't really know what to say. I still don't know why this thing exists. I don't know. I don't understand how it became such a hit. I'm glad it influenced a lot of hip hop, but it's still, I'm still very confused by it.
Oh, yeah. It's great. But actually, I kind of really do. I kind of am enjoying this. I thought it was, I like, even the Inagata De Vida, I thought was actually a really good cover of that song. I mean, it's an instrumental cover, but it was actually well done.
It was well done, and I like the drum breakdown in the middle there.
Yep.
This reminds me, like, there's a drumming style that this reminds me of, and it's like played, the drums are played with a bit of a swing and like, it's cool. I like that style of drumming and this really has that. It's reminding me of somebody, a drummer that it reminds me of something like maybe Santana or something.
Oh yeah. Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah.
Any like one of those big bands that have like, you know, a percussionist going alongside the drummers, you're going to have a little bit of that. And that's why it reminded me of Afrobeat, because there's a lot of that in Afrobeat. I mean, it kind of is circled around it. It's a very interesting way of moving a song along. It's this very, very, it chugs along like a big truck or something like that. It just kind of, I don't know how else to explain it.
I know exactly what you mean. It feels like it's in motion. It feels like it's moving. I know exactly what you mean. And it's like, I really, like, I don't know, like, what to say, really, because, like, this is, like, there's nothing really to pick apart here. I mean, it's well done, it's well produced. It sounds very, like, for the 70s, it sounds very modern. Like, it sounds like it could have been recorded yesterday.
Well, it definitely has a dated production quality to it that I found. But that's not taken away from it. I mean, it's clean and crisp and everything, but but the reverb on everything, it was a room reverb. It was not like the gated reverb that you found in the 80s and stuff like that. But this was like this. And you would hear it in this, especially in the 60s and 70s for like soundtrack music and stuff like that. This room reverb that just sound makes it sound very big. Like obviously it was recorded in a big room. I don't know if it's live off the floor or not. I think it was, but I don't actually know that. But yeah, that's sort of the quality that I picked up from it.
Yeah, I can hear that. But it also has like the gated reverb sound, like the one you were talking about, was really only around for a few years in the 80s.
Yeah.
And the 90s was almost getting back to sort of this. And with a lot of like the roots rock stuff, like the like bands like the Wallflowers and bands like that were sort of, and Wilco and people like that were sort of going back to the 70s sort of style.
Yeah, they were, but not necessarily this 70s style. It was more of a warmer, sort of closer sound that they were going for.
Okay, that's fair. That is fair.
Yeah.
The playing on, I don't even, like, Jim Gordon is the only name we know for sure. They said Ringo might have played something on this. But the playing on it is really well done. I didn't hear any flaws. They're all like studio guys. So I think, yeah, this is, I don't really know what to say about it, because it's an interesting album. It's weird, but it's weird because it's not weird. Like there's nothing strange about it, but it's just like,
but it just sort of sits alone.
Yeah. It's sort of like an island unto itself. And
it's the cool loner kid as opposed to the weird one eating glue in the back of the class.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. yeah, that's a good analogy. So that's brings us to the question with like, would you listen to this again?
Yeah, probably. I don't know if I would listen to it necessarily as an album, because I think it kind of does get, like, we broke it up like almost halfway through. I think it might get a little old if you're just listening to it straight through. Other than that, yeah, I think it's great. I would say I'd probably listen to it again. I'd say yes.
Yeah, I would too. I don't think I would put it on as an album, but I think I would maybe mix it in with other stuff for sure. Yeah. Cause there isn't a song on here that I didn't like. And there isn't, I think if we're like putting it on at a party or something, I think it would blend in well with other stuff. So if I were like creating a playlist for a party or something like that, like I would probably put a few songs from here on there.
I can imagine doing like a vintage party and putting this on.
Yeah.
Yeah. That would be kind of fun.
Yeah. So I would listen to it in that way. I don't think I would sit down and listen to it, you know, as an album, but you know, playing it that way, I wouldn't be opposed to hearing this again.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess we'll end the episode there. Thank you so much for listening if you made it this far. We want to hear from you, whether you agree or disagree with our review of the album. You can reach out to us by going to our contact page at polyphonicpress.com/contact. And if you want to help out the show, you can do that by also going to the website, going to polyphonicpress.com/support. You can sign up for Patreon, buymeacoffee.com. All those links are there. And I think that just about does it. I'm Jeremy Boyd.
I'm John Van Dyke.
Take it easy.